Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Filmcast where we talk about a variety of random topics that did not make it into the show. I'm David Chen here with Devinder Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. This episode brought to you courtesy of the fine folks at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your support, folks. It really means a lot. Today on the podcast, we got a quick question we'll be addressing from the mailbag, and then we're going to be moving straight into a review of Alexander Payne's newest film, The Holdovers. Really looking forward to discussing this one with you guys. So it should be a great conversation. Let's get to a quick email first. So every month we post on Patreon, let us know your questions, your comments, etc., and we try to respond to them, and we usually get to a tiny fraction of them, but we keep plugging away, even though we're never going to get to the bottom of this mailbag. We're still trying, though.
Infinite content is what we call it.
Infinite content.
Always have stuff to talk about.
Keep fucking that chicken.
That's what you call it?
No.
Okay.
What is that? I know that's like political, like a politician said that, right? What is that from?
You know, I honestly don't remember. It's so long
ago. Feels like
now.
A Veep thing.
It's an old meme, okay. But I don't remember where it originally
came from. This was coined by television anchor Ernie Anastos during a live broadcast of the Fox 5 New York local news. the news anchor, like the weatherman gave their... The meteorologist gave the forecast, and then the news anchor said, "Great forecast. Keep fucking that chicken."
I love Fox 5. I miss Fox 5 so much. It's so chaotic. Yeah.
It's amazing. It doesn't get any less funny even after all this time.
There's more explanation here on Urban Dictionary. The exchange was Ernie said, "It takes a tough man to make a tender forecast, Nick." And Nick Gregory says, "Well, I guess that's me." And then he said, "Keep fucking that chicken." The first line is a parody of a commercial for Purdue Chicken from the 1970s in which Frank Purdue uttered the tagline, "It takes a tough man to make a tender chicken."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then "keep fucking that chicken" was the punchline of a joke of the same time about how Purdue did it. I see. Okay. Wow. This is, I'm
you're going,
learning
you're
about,
deep.
Deep
going
deep.
Learning yeah. about fucking that chicken lore.
You got to tenderize that chicken, otherwise it's too tough. Yeah. It's all true.
Okay. June writes in, "I suddenly notice there's a new genre of shows and movies. I call them kitchen stress content." From fictional shows like The Bear, Boiling Point, and Burnt, to reality shows like Hell's Kitchen, which, to be fair, is not new.
It's like 20 years, man.
Yeah. Not sure if I really like such genre, but the toxic and stressful settings seem to draw me in. I want to know if any of you like such shows, and does such stressful content actually help you de-stress if you've had a rough day? So that's the question
absolutely.
From June. What do you think about kitchen stress content? By the way,
this is.
I'll just tell a quick side mm-hmm. story. I posted this on my Insta stories and my TikTok. Basically, this week, I tried to make sous vide.
You opened it to the masses. Your
sous vide
Insta stories.
Mashed potatoes.
Uh-huh.
Because I saw a TikTok that was like, when you make mashed potatoes, like the potatoes absorb all the stuff that's around them, which typically is salt water when you're making mashed potatoes.
Yeah,
which is good.
So imagine if you sous vided them and then you dumped a bunch of cream cheese and butter and rosemary in there. It would
keep
then soak up all that flavoring.
Yeah, really like, fucking that potato.
This is amazing.
You could just boil them in a pot and then put a bunch of stuff in the pot. And
you could do that. Let me finish my story because I think that lesson is very relevant. So I skinned a bunch of potatoes. I put them all in a sous vide bag. I threw a whole stick of butter in there, some spices. I was ready to go. I heated my sous vide bath to 194 degrees, which is really high. Like usually you're between 150, right? So that's way really high. It's like piping hot. It's not how sous vide is meant to be done most of the time. And I put it in, and you're supposed to cook it for 90 minutes, which is...
At that temperature?
At that temperature, which is like...
No!
Wild.
Dude,
okay,
I could've, I'm done with my mashed potatoes
yeah,
already.
Yeah. You've cooked your meal. You've eaten the meal. You've washed the dishes by that point.
I'm watching season two of The Bear right now.
I put the bag in. And I was like, I had left a little air in the bag. So I lifted the bag up to like kind of readjust it. And because there's a little air in the bag, like the stuff can move around freely, the potatoes move to the bottom of the bag with such force that they pierced the bag.
Oh, no.
All the potatoes, the butter, everything just came out into the bath.
Now, were you instructed to use such a high temperature?
Yes, that is the correct temp.
Huh.
I feel like sometimes
the fact that the bag was so hot, I think, hurt things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah.
That was really sad.
Thank you.
I put so much work into like making this ready to go. I waited like half an hour for the sous vide bath to come up. Anyway, so all that said, I had my own kitchen nightmare this week. I just wanted to share that with you guys.
I do feel like people sometimes sous vide things just to say, oh, I sous vide that. I didn't just boil it. Didn't just bake it. I put it in a bag at a semi-hot water temperature. And you cook slowly, buddy. So slowly.
I have yet to experiment with the sous vide. I have not. I've been told by many that it is next level, but I have not.
It can
tried
be good for family stuff when you just want to like throw something in there and then you sear it when you're ready. But yeah.
Also, by the way, I use the term sous vided in my video, and a bunch of TikTokers gave me some grief about using the term sous vided because that
verb
is not technically the past tense of sous vide. Apparently, you're supposed to say cooked sous vide and not sous vide.
It's just, it's not a, you verbed it.
Yeah, well, sous vide means like, sous vide means something
really,
yeah.
You really so, showed your ass there.
That's
what it was.
I'm taking hits left and right. Okay.
I mean, so, I guess it's no surprise that those mashed potatoes got fucked, you know?
Keep fucking those mashed potatoes. But Jeff, sous vide has changed my life. It's
really,
that's what people say. Basically all my protein that way at this point. You can get a steak that is like restaurant quality using sous vide.
I feel like I'm one thing behind because I'm at the, the air fryer has changed my life stage, which people, I feel like that was like two generations ago.
That's still like very relevant. No shade to the air fryer as well. But like
for me, it is
proteins like steak, chicken, salmon. It's an amazing invention. Go ahead.
But it requires work and it requires setup. Yeah. For me, it's the toaster oven. A really good toaster oven will change your life. Like, I have to cook whole meals in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Back to June's question. Kitchen stress things. Devendra, you're going to react.
Yes,
like, what do you think about
this? Because
this
is ancient. This is ancient, basically. Like, this is back to Iron Chef. I remember watching Iron Chef reruns without language translation in the 90s on like the NHK network or something. And then Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential book came out, and everybody got into this stuff because that book really told like the madness of what goes on behind the kitchen. And that is kind of what sparked a lot of food shows and a lot of like food media in general. I'm a big fan of it. I'm not as big a fan of something like Hell's Kitchen, but I do think, I really like Iron Chef. I really like Iron Chef and then Chopped and a lot of the other shows. And it's that vibe. You know, I was a big Bourdain fan because he went into the less stressful parts, like the context of food, the culture of food. These shows are a little different. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff, we talked a couple weeks ago about how, like, what is your experience when watching scary movies? And you said, like, you don't really experience being scared. You get disturbed, you know, but it's, like, very different emotion. I am curious, like, when you watch a show like The Bear, which is very stressful, like, a lot of people are like, I saw a viral social post this week that was like, I started watching The Bear and it was too stressful, so I turned on some 9/11 documentaries and stuff. Right?
Switched over to Uncut Gems to cool down.
Yeah.
Just watch some Safdie Brothers stuff. You know, that's really gonna help you calm. What's your experience like watching something like The Bear? Does it amplify your stress? Does it soothe it?
I definitely sympathize. I feel that emotion certainly when I'm watching The Bear. I love The Bear. I mean, I'm very excited having heard just yesterday that season 3 has been greenlighted.
Excellent. Greenlit, I believe is
greenlighted is the correct term, David.
Oh wow. Okay. Well,
you have to greenlight something. Nothing is being lit. There's no light turning on.
Again, the once again, to, getting school.
Once again, my past tense usage is terrible. It's not super.
To greenlight something, you greenlight something. That's the word. It's not. Yeah. There's no lighting happening, so it's greenlighted. People often use it wrong though. Anyway,
happy to be schooled.
That is a show I really love. And I was going to say when you first brought this up, and I haven't really had much interest in the reality show versions of these. I've never watched A Kitchen Nightmares. But then Devendra said Iron Chef.
Iron Chef,
I went,
man.
Oh, man. Yeah, I used to love Iron Chef. I used to watch that like crazy. back when it was in its heyday, what, like the early 2000s, was that?
It was like well, in Japan, it was like the 90s. And then like early 2000s, I believe it started coming to the US. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I only kind of discovered it when it came to the US, but like when Food Network first premiered, I want to say.
Like yeah, Bobby Flay was like, he had a battle with like the head Iron Chef or the lead Iron Chef. That was a big deal on Food Network. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was really into that show for a while in those days, but I've never watched a Kitchen Nightmares or any Chopped or any of that stuff. I'm not
Great
really
British
drawn to
Bake
it.
Off. You don't watch any of that?
People have recommended
Jeff,
that to
that
me for a long time.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I've never been drawn to that stuff. I will tell you this: my son absolutely loves the Kids Baking Championship.
Yes,
with
yep.
What's Duff? What is his name? The baking guy and what's her name from One Day at a Time. Anyway, he loves it. He devours that show, and I've watched it with him. And that's that show. In fact, I've been meaning to bring that up on the main show for a while because I've watched so many episodes of that.
That's a fun show. Yeah,
that show is amazing because it's like I don't know quite how to feel about it because in one sense it's like wholesome and lovely and wonderful. And in the other sense, it's like, let's give the kids a taste of the real world, how cutthroat it is, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're very sweet. They're very kind to the kids. And in a certain sense, I'm like, yeah, they need to learn that not everybody gets to win. And you know, that's the real world is hard.
MasterChef Junior has been around for a while, too.
But also, like, little kids crying on the show is... constant.
That's
it
life,
is little
Jeff,
kids crying.
That is life, unfortunately.
I guess. I don't know how to feel about it, honestly.
It's I do like to show my kids content. Like there's a lot of TikToks of parents helping their kids make food. I'm like, just tell my daughter, like, that kid's making a whole dinner for her family.
I wonder,
wouldn't it be great if you started doing that? That'd be awesome.
Get on that.
Yeah. My wife has been recovering from illness for the last month or so, and so she has watched no less than 50 hours of Great British Bake Off during the last month.
Yeah.
And I have several observations. First of all, interesting fact, it is not called the Great British Bake Off in the United States. I think it's called like the Great
the
British
Kingdom,
Baking
United
Show or
Kingdom.
Like that. And that is because I think Pillsbury owns the trademark to the term Bake Off. So they can't use Bake Off in the title, which is...
But it's okay in America?
No. They can't use it in America. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They can use it in the UK. It's the Great British Bake Off. In the US, it's something else. There is a... Junior Bake Off show that has kids in it, and I was watching the show and I was like, this is legalized child torture is what I'm watching here, because they present this thing that's like, hey, let's make a bunch of cupcakes, but all the cupcakes look like penguins, you know, or whatever that, and it's like, even as an adult, that would be difficult to perform in like 1 hour.
Extraordinary what these kids are capable of. It's extraordinary, and I've done a lot. Listen,
well, I'd say a huge percentage of them do not succeed to any meaningful degree, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, if you've watched Kids Baking Championship, they are S tier.
Yeah, they're very good
baking kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've gone down the rabbit hole because I started watching it with my son, and I was like, turning to my wife, going, "This is all horseshit. This is all. There's no universe where these kids did that." And so I got on the old computer, blee, blah, bloop, and I started, using the Google machine. And what I found was, they stick to the story saying they helped the kids zero help.
Yeah.
And Valerie Bertinelli has said numerous times, she's like, it's extraordinary what the kids do. And what has happened, because it's been on for so long, is the kids are like students of the show. The kids that want to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, they get good at these techniques that even adult bakers aren't good at because they know they're applicable to the show. They're like training themselves for this one task of being on this show.
What a media monster we have created.
They are really capable of doing these extraordinary things. And dude, I am blown away by what these little, and the fact that they can like come up with stuff on the fly. It's wild. Valerie Bertinelli insists that the only times they ever help the kids is when they start bursting into tears. And yeah. then all their help is, you can do it. Don't worry, you can do it.
I'm sure there's help if they chop off a finger. Like, you know, things happen sure on all the cooking shows. But Jeff, just tell your kids, it'd be great if you could do that.
Yeah. No, I do that with my son. I'm like, when are you gonna make me something?
Yeah, make me something.
All right, going back to the original question, I have to say, to a significant degree, I do experience shows like The Bear in the same way that I experience horror films, which is glad that's not me. Like, I'm watching, I'm like, wow, that looks like a really stressful thing that guy is experiencing. You know,
yeah.
Glad that's not me. And to be able to like vicariously experience the stress, but knowing that like I'm not in that situation,
you're safe.
I do get a lot of value out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I remember watching the first season of The Bear and sort of like relating to it, because for me, meal prep for my kids is basically we bring them back from school and I have like a countdown timer until there is a full on meltdown in the house, unless dinner is fully ready and on the table. So it's like, okay, but I start at maybe 5:30, everything has to be there. Otherwise, kids will start screaming and it's going to be a whole on freak out. And maybe they're going to get better about this. But, you know, that's me. I have like stove, toaster oven, microwave. Just I'm like around the kitchen.
You're in a reality show.
I'm looking at the clock. When they like smash zoom to the clock and The Bear, that is me. Like, 5:20. That rice is not done. What's going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah. So,
you know,
it's not good, whatever it is.
It's not good.
I think the idea of it's too I didn't want to watch it because it's too stressful. That doesn't resonate with me. I would never, I don't think I've ever uttered those phrases, or I was very rarely uttered those phrases, because if it's stressful, it's making me feel something, which is the reason why I watch a piece of work, you know?
Yeah, to feel like a real human.
Like a real boy.
Feel emotion.
Yeah.
So I am a huge fan of stuff like The Bear, and even if I'm really stressed out, I don't. I do understand, you know, I spoke with, we went to a Michelin star restaurant recently and spoke with some of the staff about The Bear, and that I understand. If you like work in that space and you don't want to experience that every day, like after you come home, I completely get that. But for me, who's not in the industry, I find a lot of value in kitchen stress shows.
What's the difference between that and like watching something like Curb Your Enthusiasm? Where you are,
it's
the person
cringe.
Is doing
it's
something.
More cringe. Yeah. It's more it's of like more, a cringe.
Yeah.
I stopped watching shows because they're too annoying, and Curb is one of them. So
Well, is that an equally pleasurable or desirable feeling for you, Dave, or is that a different?
That's just Dave.
Animal.
Yeah. I think the reason I get a lot out of Curb specifically is like I relate to. It's like not everything.
Yeah.
But some of the things Larry David says, I'm like, oh, I wish I could say that.
Yeah,
out loud. But I'm not a billionaire. I'm not a billionaire, you know. So yet, so that's
he's a billionaire. Wow.
Need a few more patrons, ladies and gentlemen. Spread the word.
What do we think Larry David's net worth is? It's according to National Review, his net worth is around $400 million.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Not a hundred millionaire. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thanks for the question, June. I hope this very meandering answer was somewhat entertaining.
There's also a lot of great chill food content. So look at all the travel food shows, because I think everything Stanley Tucci is doing now is all over. He's just traveling around Italy.
And Great British Bake Off around Italy.
Yeah.
Great British Bake Off is also very relatively chill. Mm-hmm. It's very like edifying. Like everyone's kind of rooting for each other. People are kind, you know, so like
except
it's
for their
show, so,
ethnic flavor episodes.
Yeah, skip those.
Maybe skip those.
If you want to go really, really, comforty. I recently rediscovered a show that I used to watch when I was a little kid. You guys can stop me if I mentioned this before. I may have already. Mm-hmm. But I found on YouTube there are full episodes of Pasquale, which is it's an old PBS show I used to watch as a kid, mostly because it reminded me of my grandpa. It was this old Italian guy who would cook and sing opera at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I remember this. Yeah.
Delightful. Yeah. At the end of every episode, by the way, watching it, it's from the early 80s. And watching it, you realize the difference in pace between what we had then and what we have now, especially on PBS, which is like, we don't care. You know,
pasta with meat sauce.
We have no commercial interests here.
Yeah.
But
and like, just like literally the number of cuts, too. It's bad. Mm-hmm. It's bad for this upcoming generation, you know, like the number of cuts.
In cooking shows where it's like, we have to show you, you know, there's like stages and we have it all pre-prepped. And it's like with Pasquale, he literally just cooks a meal in a half an hour and you're there the whole time. You're just, it's one mm-hmm. shot. He's just mm-hmm. there singing and cooking. And
yeah,
the end of every episode of Pasquale, he pulls what is invariably an old lady out of his audience and brings her on stage and sits her down at this table and serves the meal to her. Yeah. And it is like the set is made to look like a old person's living room. And he just, he treats her like a queen and she's invariably some like elderly lady who just thinks he's delightful. And he serves her the meal. It's such wholesome, lovely so nice. Content.
That's great.
Speaking of editing, by the way, like Bobby Flay was talking about Food Network, they didn't edit shows. Those shows were recorded live. So he got really good at like throwing to commercial break as like something was cooking and like coming back and finishing the meal. So TikTok would never, you could never do that on TikTok. No.
Well, I would argue that like where that has gone is like, there's people like J. Kenji Lopez Alt, right? Yep. Who like makes like YouTube videos that are like 30 minutes long that have very few cuts. And it's just him preparing the meal, you know, like, that stuff still exists. It's just in a very different form.
It's also first person, and he is a weirdo wearing, you know, a head mounted camera.
He uses a GoPro basically. Like
he did one going through. Yeah. He went through a grocery store in Seattle. Did you see that one?
I saw that. Yeah.
And then it's just like people watching. It's like, what? Oh, he's streaming. Okay, get out of the way of the streamer. I'm trying to shop for, you know, potatoes over here. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, thanks for the question, June, and thanks for putting up with us as we went on many tangents, but I appreciated having the conversation with you guys. Let's get to our conversation about the holdovers. And the file didn't play correctly. I'm going to try it one more time.
Son of a...
Sir, I don't understand.
That's glaringly apparent.
I can't fail this class.
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Mr. Coates. I truly believe that you can.
Every year at Barton Academy, students, faculty, and staff depart the campus for a two-week winter break. But there are always an unfortunate few who have nowhere to go for the holidays. They're known as the holdovers.
Mr. Hunnam.
Hello, Mary.
I heard you got stuck with babysitting duty this year. How'd you manage that?
You know, he used to be a student, right?
Yeah, that's why he knows how to inflict maximum pain on us.
I thought all the Nazis were hiding in Argentina.
Stifle it, Tully.
An old-fashioned kind of trailer. You don't get that anymore with the voiceover guy. They're called
the
holdovers.
It's an old-fashioned movie.
It's an old-fashioned movie. Like, all the credits, like, you know, everything is done as though
they,
it's...
Did they get that guy out of retirement? Or did they find a new guy to do the 70s voice?
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
It's not... You come can on, do that, 70s? Jeff. Okay, 90s, Devendra. Come on.
Let's I don't know.
It's 70. Like,
it's well, the 70s.
I know the style of the movie is 70. I'm just saying...
he was in the 90s,
The voiceover artist guy, like... The trailers he was in were like as recently as the 90s.
As recently as the 90s. But I'm saying, Jeff, you could do that. That could be your new thing.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready.
Yes.
Yeah.
One out of every 15 months, comes along a movie trailer that needs a voiceover. You know?
That's right.
Luckily,
one out of every 15 months, I need to pay my mortgage.
According to IMDb, a cranky history teacher at a remote prep school is forced to remain on campus over the holidays with a troubled student who has no place to go. That's the plot. We are going to share briefly about our non-spoilery thoughts, and then you should just assume spoilers for the rest of the conversation. Jeff already talked about how he enjoyed this movie on the main show, so Devendra, I'm going to start with you. What did you think about The Holdovers?
Yeah, I didn't just enjoy this movie. I loved this movie. You know, guys, like getting to this screening to see this, it's not out in theaters here around me. I drove through over an hour of Atlanta traffic.
Google,
it was one of those situations where Google was like, okay, go down this exit. No. Turn here. Turn down the street right now. Otherwise, you will miss. So I got to the screening right as it was starting, but I was not in a good mood, guys. I was tired. I was hungry. I sat down and I watched this movie, and it completely won me over because it is funny. It is heartfelt. It's deeply meaningful. Like, I think this is... not just a good movie. I think this is a great movie and probably going to be one of those holiday movies I revisit frequently. I think it is just my perfect wavelength of, you know, cynical but sweet. And that is a hard thing to capture, and this movie does it perfectly.
Wonderful. I'll share a few quick thoughts, and then Jeff, we can go to you for another summary of your thoughts on this. But Yeah, first of all, Devendra, you and I met at a school that's very similar to this one.
I had so many vibes. I'm except, like, yeah, this it's is a, Winter, it's, Massachusetts. We
met at Devendra and I met in college. This is a high school, like a prep school.
Yes, it looks exactly like our college. It's like very the same similar, red brick buildings. Yeah,
yeah, to like in feel to the school. Mm-hmm. And I always
it was in Boston, right?
Yeah, it was Massachusetts.
Western Mass. Yeah.
So it's very similar in vibes. And I was always curious about like the lives of the people that worked there and like what was that, what was all that like? And I think this movie does a pretty decent job of answering that question.
Mm-hmm. There were kids at our college who didn't go home for winter break. And I would occasionally hang out with them during those breaks. So that felt very familiar too.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's this kind of weird, it's this interesting dynamic because you think that anyone who is able to go to one of these schools is like hyper privileged. But then you discover actually that's not the case. Like everyone comes from a very different and complex situation. Well,
the privilege is there, but that's not the only thing. I think like that's my main takeaway from this movie. Cause that certainly
one of the big takeaways I would argue is everyone's fighting a battle you know nothing about. And you think you have someone pinned down. You see that, you look at them, you read a 3-sentence description of them in a document, and then you're like, I know who that person is and what their deal is.
Yeah.
But you don't. Often you don't. You don't know what their deal is.
And you're bringing in your own baggage to judge them too. Like, it's a whole thing. Yeah.
Overall, I think this movie is highly enjoyable. It's, you know, it's the kind of movie, because it's a throwback, but it's the kind of movie they don't really make that much anymore. It's just like a few people hanging out, bouncing off each other, and you kind of learn a little bit about them, and you kind of sense how their bonds flow and change and wither and grow, you know, over time. Like it's just like a lovely small character driven movie. I was actually impressed with how much like period detail there was in this movie, because there's like shots of like outside a building where there's like 10 vehicles from that time period. I'm like,
streets
wow,
in
that,
Boston.
That was probably like 20% of the budget, that shot right there, you know, of this movie. So,
although would you do that with actual set dressing now, or could you do that digitally? What is cheaper at this point?
You could, for sure. Yeah. You know, I have no idea how they did, but then visual effects also expensive, you know? I do want to say, I think the main cast, you know, there's three people on the poster of this movie. They are kind of the primary figures in the movie. And I think each of them does a wonderful job. Paul Giamatti, Dominic Sessa, who I think this is like one of his first roles.
First credit.
He was like discovered in a drama class or something like that. And then
Divine
Joy Randolph, who plays Mary. That trio of performances really anchors the movie. They're all great. They have great chemistry with each other. So I had a great time with the movie. Jeff, some overall thoughts, and then let's talk about some spoilers for the whole.
Yeah, what I said in the main show was that, you know, this is a small, quiet, sweet movie, and like you said, that we don't see many of those anymore on the big screen. These are relegated to being prestige television shows. These kinds of experiences, because we don't really get to see them on the big screen, and this does feel like a throwback. It doesn't reinvent the wheel, like I think. You kind of can sense what our big plot beats are going to be as you enter this. Although there is a bit of a surprise toward the beginning, but I think that overall, as you kind of get into it, like there's not really any, from a plot perspective, not anything particularly surprising or unprecedented. Like it is the kind of movie, the kind of story we've seen many times. Hardened characters softened by their relationships with each other. But the method of moving through it, the particularities of these characters are lovely. It's lovely, and it's a lovely little snapshot of time and humanity. And I think it rests and falls, rises and falls on the performances, and the performances are great. It is great. It's a lovely little movie, and it does feel like a little movie to me.
I remember you saying that, Jeff, and just watching it though, I'm like, well, I can understand why, right? The scope of it is very small. You're mostly in this town. You're focused on these characters, but it does feel, I don't know, also grand and sweeping to me. Like this is a movie that kind of touches on so many different themes. And I think it's a movie a lot of people can pull different things from. So I want to watch this with my wife. I want to watch this with my family. I think it plays like a sitcom at times, but also a good sitcom where it's like, oh, they knew these characters, right? All the actors know the characters. The writers are on point, and every situation is hilarious. And then it just wallops you. occasionally with some major moments, and those all worked for me. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to move into spoilers for The Holdover, so you should assume we're spoiling the whole movie starting this point. I want to give a huge shout out to the language in the movie, and specifically the way Paul Giamatti's character is written. He speaks like how I want to speak.
Like an asshole?
Yeah, pretend an asshole.
An asshole who speaks in withering terms about everyone around him. That is what I aspire to. You
an
know?
Asshole who gives out meditations to everyone. Good book, but my God, man.
So he's like, he has like all these terms, like don't be like a sexual vulgarian or like all these, you know, the way he says stuff, the vocabulary he uses, you know,
it's great.
Yes, I'm quite familiar with many of these reprobates, you know, like he's really... Like the stereotype of an asshole professor at one of the schools.
Yes.
And he does it. It's such a good job. But the writing really brings that character to life. And within the first, you know, 10, 15 minutes of meeting that character, you get a really good sense of who that guy is. And then, of course, the movie kind of breaks that down a little bit and helps you kind of understand a little bit more of his background.
It's Giamatti too. Like it's the writing plus Giamatti. We know he can be curmudgeonly, right? I want to go back and revisit Sideways because of this movie. But I also sometimes think about guys. Paul Giamatti was a Spider-Man villain at one point, right? And we never
not just any. He was Rhino.
He was the Rhino. And I remember that movie. I was asleep for most of that movie. But the 5% of that movie where Paul Giamatti was in a Rhino suit just screaming, I was like, that is a better performance of a man screaming in a robot suit than this movie deserves. Thank you, Paul Giamatti. And once again, I'm saying, thank you, Paul Giamatti.
A man with the body of Dr. Octopus playing the Rhino, you know?
I think that character is really great. And again, the movie sets up a version of each of these characters, and it kind of then deconstructs it. You think, Paul, he's an asshole that has no redeeming qualities, or
we're waiting for the turn.
Dominic Sessa's character, he's like a super privileged who just wants his way, and he's an asshole when he doesn't get his, you know, like that kind of thing. And then it's like, oh, actually, everyone's backstory is way more complicated than you think, or you might think from at first blush. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I didn't really know anything about this movie going in, as I like to do. And I was genuinely surprised when what I thought was going to be this ensemble cast was all shuffled off.
Yes.
In the that first was a bummer. 15 minutes. That was a bummer. I thought I was actually bummed out. Cause I was like, oh, we're going to see how these characters like all learn from each other and grow. Sure. And you know,
the Breakfast Club again.
Yeah, totally. Right? I thought it was going to be all of them having turning points and all of it. Mm-hmm. And it's literally like, they literally like, helicopter them away. No, this is a three-hander. Sorry.
Yeah, but it was like really good until that point. I was like, oh, I'm starting to like learn. He's nice to the Asian kid. I'm like, oh, that's gonna be interesting. And then, oh, they're all gone. Well, they're gone.
It's so funny though. I love the idea of this dad feeling guilty and coming back, and he's like, can you take all the kids skiing? He's like, sure.
Yeah, why not?
Money means nothing to me.
I own the ski lodge, whatever.
Money has no meaning, so yeah. The only question is, can we fit them all on my private helicopter? You
know, exactly.
Like, that's the only thing. I was a little bummed about it because it felt like very rich.
Yeah.
Like there's all these kids that have different personality.
A lot of hooks. A lot of hooks.
Yeah.
And it just feels like the movie's jettisons all
and
of
it's
that.
Just like, this is too, they're writing, they're like, this is too hard. We can't do this.
It's too much.
Too many characters.
I feel like partially it's the movie, this is many movies all at the same time, right? This feels like Sideways, but also like The Breakfast Club, but also like A Christmas Story at times too. Like there's so many, I do like that it changes itself up, almost like it's challenging itself. Like, okay, we gave you Breakfast Club. Let's move on. Let's do the other bits. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about like kind of how this movie wrapped up? I mean, I think what I appreciated about the movie is like how it structures some of its reveals. So there's rarely a scene where people just sit down and they talk about their backstory. It usually like comes out when some other event has interceded to elicit it. So like, as an example, when Paul Giamatti meets his old classmate, or is it his old classmate? I think it's his old classmate.
His old Harvard classmate, right.
And then he just starts
Decker
like,
men don't lie.
He just starts lying, you know, and we've seen Dominic Sessa's character lie before. So we know that he could just Like, he could just play along and
I kind of love, like, the awareness of Dominic Sessa's character and just being like, oh, we're doing this?
Yeah, okay. We're doing this? Yeah. Oh, this is, yeah, the, yeah, this is gotcha. Where we're going? Yeah.
And this is my jam. This is, this is my wheelhouse, baby.
And then that's how you find out, like, all... And it's just, like, doled out very naturalistically. Like, hey, actually, I never graduated and this happened. You know, it's not like... Hey, let's sit down and have an exposition dump about everything. Like, I like how the movie structured.
But it's
and
very,
also, like, the reveal that, like, Dominic Sessa's character gave his dad this gift, right? And, you know, that doesn't, that's a real shock when that you find out. Right?
Yeah. My favorite scene in the whole movie, I think, is when we think that Paul Giamatti's character is kind of having some romantic situation with the woman and at her party, and she invites him to the party and she's like all about him, and then she gets up and kisses that dude, and
it is one of the most brutal friend zonings I've ever witnessed.
And you just realize that's just how she is. She's just one of those bubbly lovely people who cares about other humans.
Absolutely.
And my goodness,
the exact opposite of
complete heartbreak in that moment of just him going,
yeah,
oh, I'm a fucking idiot.
I don't know about you guys, but I also related to that precise moment. That actress too, by the way, I just want to shout out, that is Carrie Preston.
She's awesome.
She is awesome in everything, but she is on The Good Fight and The Good Wife, and she plays a character that is so likable and lovable. They have started a spinoff just based around her, just based around Carrie Preston being likable. Like, that's going to be the show. So I love her. I'm glad she got to be in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I like that the movie is sad. Like, what I mean by that is,
it's,
you know,
very,
like,
sad.
You could imagine a version of this movie where, like, everyone gets what they want, right? Like, there's a version of this movie where he gets the girl, and no one gets fired at the end, you know. Like, but I think the movie is, like, pretty brutally realistic in that way, in that, like, things, good things can't happen without bad things happening to other people, basically.
Yeah.
It's grounded. Like, I don't think I love his character. I love Giamatti's character because his cynicism isn't unwarranted, right? Because the world does suck. It is brutal. It is unfair. But what do you let that consume you? Do you let that fester?
Right.
And do you let that spread out to everybody else around you, including young impressionable minds? Like, do you ruin them just because you have gone through so much? And his ultimate lesson is no. You know, like, he can be better. He could do better. He can help. He can be more aware of these people rather than judging him. Also, he's stuck. He's in arrested. You know, he's stuck in arrested development. He's at his high school, and this guy needs to leave. Right. So the going out in a very brave way, I think, was it's just fitting. It's very grounded. It's very real.
There was a report released in October of this year, so last month. I'm reading from the Harvard Crimson. Harvard report shows 79% A-range grades awarded in 2020 to 2021, the sparking faculty discussion. And they have this chart that shows what percentage of grades were A's. And in 2010, it was 60%. Now it's 79%. And basically...
That's wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think, you know, this movie reflects a simpler time when Paul Giamatti's behavior was actually even remotely acceptable. You know, like, yes, he's given a very hard time, but he's not fired for it. Yet. And I think, like, a lot of people now, like, so much of what is happening in U.S. universities is tied in with commerce, is tied in with keeping students and parents happy. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that's a huge thing driving grade inflation, right? Is, like, why anger the son of the state senator? Like, what advantage is there to you to do that, right? And it's refreshing to see a guy like Paul Giamatti who has a code and he's like, fuck them kids. Like, I'm going to, I'm doing what I think is right. Mm-hmm. And if this means failing someone who's really important and going to contribute millions of dollars to the school, so be it. There's something admirable about that, even as it is basically unrealistic and impossible in today's society.
Yeah. So. His stubbornness hurt him and is hurting people around him too. Like, that kid probably deserved it, but I don't know. He could have done something else. Do want to point out the story he told his classmate. This is such a pre-social media era movie because you could just you could just
easily check
away. There's a good chance that a classmate will never realize what actually happened.
What a time it was when you can just meet people
just
on the street and just lie. Just make up a complete lie about your life and how
because
it's
these people don't matter. What should their judgment of you matter? These people don't matter to you. You will never see that guy again in your life. So lie. give the good history of yourself, right? Yeah, like, who cares? Absolutely.
It's completely defensible. Jeff Cannata, what were you going to say?
Yeah. Speaking of Paul Giamatti characters, code, I particularly enjoyed his code with regard to Divine Joy Randolph's character, mm-hmm. and how he insisted everyone treat her with respect, and like his the rant he goes on about how you will never understand the pain that she's experiencing, and mm-hmm. and like defending her son as a decent, upstanding person, and his sort of like inherent frustration at these privileged kids who, you know, don't understand that everyone else hasn't lived the life that they've lived. And I just thought that was beautiful, and it expressed really, I think, eloquently in the movie. Yeah. And I love Divine Joy Randolph in the film. I'm a big, you know, I knew her from Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah. Mm.
And to see her flex her acting chops here, I mean, she just does such a lovely performance in this movie. I was very impressed.
Yeah. All right, folks. Any other thoughts on The Holdovers? I think we all had a great time with it. And
This may end up in my top 10 this year. Like, wow. I love this movie. I'm going to revisit this movie often. Like, it gives me, I'm glad you brought up the Amherst comparisons, Dave, because it did. It's 80 degrees right now outside my door. It is November 8th. It is 80 degrees outside in Atlanta. And I sometimes do miss the sort of like, oh, it's just snow everywhere. It's cold and everything is miserable, but it's England in New England, you know, or it's winter in New England. And it's a very special, weird vibe. And this movie perfectly captures that too.
That wonderful shot where he's just walking on, he looks down and sees that football and he decides to pick it up and throw it terribly. And then just like, oh, well, I didn't do that very well, and turns and walks away.
Nobody saw. There's no Instagram to capture this. Yeah.
Great detail.
and I love the moment towards the end of the movie, you know, him throwing himself on the sword, getting fired, like, yes, that's like the conventionally Oscar mm-hmm, sequence, mm-hmm. you know, that like, you know, if this movie is nominated, that's the scene that will be played for Paul Giamatti's clip. Mm-hmm. But the moment I really appreciated was when they're like, New Year's Eve, and they're lighting the firecracker, right?
Yeah.
And it shows like how far these people have come in the last 2 weeks, I guess it is, right? I was bummed out that like the movie started being like day one, Thursday, you know, December, and then it just completely forgot that construct until the very end. I was like, oh, did they just like forget about that? And then like at the end, they're like, oh yeah, yeah, day 13, I guess. It's like, okay. But I do like, you know, like a movie that's like counting down and you can kind of see the progress. And I was a little bummed they kind of just abandoned that. So anyway.
And I've had the experience before of, you know, I volunteered at this thing called Comfort Zone Camp. Which was, you know, for kids that have experienced devastating grief and loss in their lives, and it's amazing how short a time can be transformative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the cool things about this movie that really resonated with me is like you can. I had that experience at Comfort Zone Camp. Was it 1 week from the first day where it's like, nobody wants to talk to each other and we all hate each mm-hmm. other to like mm-hmm. 1 week and people are like, hug you, I'll never forget you, you know, like that. Right. And I loved how it is this compressed little moment of time in this movie, just this, this Christmas break, this holiday break. And you can go from, you know, these feelings of resentment and, you know, dislike, all the way to feeling like, oh my gosh, you're one of the most important people in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that aspect of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's lovely. That's lovely. All right, folks. I think that is going to do it for us today here on the Filmcast After Dark. Also, if you are listening to this, that means that if everything goes according to plan, you're going to be getting our review of The Marvels early. We a few times a year for big movies, we like to give you the review early. And so, look forward to that. It should be a fun discussion. Looking forward to chatting about it with you guys. So that's going to be it for today's After Dark. Thank you so much for your support. We'll see you very soon for our conversation about The Marvels. Goodbye.